It's a strange shift, isn't it? The parent who raised you needs some help, and you want to be there. With Care.com, you don't have to do it alone. Whether you're clear on the kind of care your aging loved one needs or still figuring it out, we've got support. Find background-checked in-home senior caregivers for anything from companionship to dementia care. Or browse senior living communities, read reviews, even schedule a tour. Plus, access to safety checks to help with your peace of mind. Still not sure what's best? Our senior care advisors, who are all master's-level social workers, can help you build a plan. For a limited time, use the code LISTEN20 for 20% off your initial Care.com subscription. That's LISTEN20, all one word, good for 20% off. Start your senior care journey with confidence.
This podcast is part of the Neverland Network, where faith meets video games, movies, and fun. Find more shows like this at neverlandpodcast.com.
Oh, maybe we can Google a Snow White joke.
From days long ago, from uncharted regions of the universe, comes a legend.
The dream that came through a million years, that lived on through all the tears.
It came here, the Fandom Nexus.
Fabulous secret powers were revealed to our host as he plugged in his microphone.
I have a podcast!
Here he is, your Spider-Pan, Jeremy.
Yes, guess what? Well, I've actually come back for a second week. I'm still alive. I'm making progress, y'all. It's like 2 weeks in a row. We're almost back to a normal schedule. I guess we're technically are, but I couldn't do it myself this time. I couldn't come alone. So I've brought the Paul J. Powers from pauljpowers.com and the Retro Rewind podcast. He's chewing on something.
Oh, sorry, Jeremy. Hey, Jeremy, thanks so much for having me on. Hey, Jeremy, why is Snow White the best judge?
I don't know, because she's the fairest of them all?
Yes, exactly.
I thought if I thought about it. Yay, I'm good at riddles sometimes. As I
thanks so much for having me on.
Well, as much as I've heard, going through your old catalog of stuff, because for a while I was driving down to Butler, Missouri, which was like an hour plus, I was catching up on some of your old shows. I'm like, you guys did a lot of old Disney animation, and you're always very excited for them, unlike Francisco. So I was like, okay, yeah. Here's somebody who likes vintage Disney animation. So if I'm about to do something that's vintage Disney, he's like, okay, Paul is going to have fun with this.
Oh, yeah. Love the animation back then. Really, the art. Really appreciate the art back then. The 2D traditional animation. Very much so. Yes.
So today, if y'all haven't figured out, we're going to be talking Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. No, we're not talking about the live action. We're talking about the Disney classic from, oh, golly, I should look up the year. Well, we'll talk about what year, but that is what we are planning today. But of course, we're going to do all of our usual fun things that we have every week. And hey, if you happen to be a member of Patreon, you're getting this episode on Wednesday. And also want to let you know that when I do have a guest on, I will try to set up an audience link in Patreon so you can actually come and watch us record the show. Now, doesn't that sound like fun? But for the rest of y'all, if you're doing this for free, that's fine, but you won't get the show until Sunday. As a reminder that I'm trying to make it more worth it for you to be a Patreon instead of just having an ad-free version of the show. So that way we can kind of mix it up. But as we usually go for a start of the show, we ask people, well, what have you been watching? So have you been watching anything fun?
Oh, I actually just saw this movie a couple nights ago. It's called Snow White and the Seven Dwarves by Walt Disney, the original.
Well. Funny you should mention that.
Honestly, I haven't been watching much. There hasn't really been. I don't think I've been to the theater since Christmas, and I saw the animated David, the 3D animated movie David, and I enjoyed that.
I'm going to get around to seeing that.
If you haven't seen that, I recommend giving it a watch.
Yeah, I kind of had a lack of income going during December. So
Christmas
was a weird thing here. So yeah. I haven't really had time to watch anything necessarily because trying to kind of balance the scales. I substitute teach during the day and I Uber at night. And so I'm very, very busy. But I found some time to hop over on Tubi because Tubi is free. and they've got some classic 80s cartoons and even earlier cartoons. So I've watched at least one episode of the Silverhawks. I think I watched two episodes of the Silverhawks, or call it Thundercats in space. I watched some Care Bears. Now, I was hoping that they would have, you know, the Care Bears before the Care Bear Cousins. They don't seem to have that, but they have where the Care Bear Cousins have popped on, which is fine. That's like around what the second movie, I think, brought the Care Bear Cousins in. And I like
the first one actually introduced them. You'd think it's the second one is where they're racing and all that. The first one is where they introduce them. But you're talking like before then, like with Cold Heart and all those other ones. Yeah.
And the little evil guy. Yes, your evilness or whatever.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
So it's just classic cartoons. So I watched an episode of that. Then I reminded myself why the Mr. T series was, you know, it's great to see Mr. T, but that series is terrible.
Oh no.
But I watched an episode and I'm like, yeah, this is, I don't know, it's just like they wanted to be the Scooby-Doo gang, but it's just not quite pulling it off.
Unfortunately, a lot of those shows back then do not hold up. I mean, they were great for its time because we didn't really have many alternatives, but yeah, going back, some of them are really difficult.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Like and I think the Mr. T cartoon only lasted for like 13 episodes because it didn't turn out. But it was nice to have Mr. T at the beginning and at the end giving you a nice lesson. But the thing is that he had such a persona that he had to keep going, that he was supposed to be like this mean, tough guy. And it wasn't until later that he was able to actually to smile. It's like, no, I'm actually a very nice person. And he's, you know, good Christian guy. And I think he was pastoring a church even for a little while. Like MC Hammer was actually like pastoring somewhere for a while. I'm like, dude. Yeah. I would love to go to that church because like that's got to be a fun place. So but I love Mr. T. He's just a wonderful guy. I'm hoping to get to meet him in person if he ever does some conventions. Because I love Mr. T, but that cartoon, it just didn't work. And I think I think even after a while, he quit voicing himself and somebody else came in.
Oh, that's too bad.
Like the first episode was still him.
The full 13 episodes. I'll tell you what, I remember watching the episodes back in the day. I haven't rewatched it back, you know, since then. I believe it doesn't hold up. But I also remember really liking this Mr. C cereal. I mean, Mr. T cereal.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it wasn't basically Captain Crunch, but it was teas.
Exactly. It tasted just like Captain Crunch, but so that's like, why it was so good.
Yeah, sort of like the Smurf berries were basically the Crunch berries.
Exactly.
So I like when they did the Oops All Berries because I get those. I'm like, it's the Smurf Berry cereal. It's back. There's a lot of old cereals I wish they'd bring back. And sometimes when they kind of do it, like I got a box over here that I keep behind some Ghostbusters figures. When they did these, was the Afterlife? I guess they had this, and it wasn't a really good cereal. It was almost like the worst version of the monster cereals you could have. It didn't taste very good at all. But I got the box. I kept the box after I ate it. I don't know how long I'll keep that because I had some Spider-Man cereal that they had that was from the animated series, and I kept that box for a while. But it's hard to keep a cereal box for a collecting thing. And so maybe it's weird to collect, but it's like, but it kind of looks nice up there where I've got like some figures of Ghostbusters. So, but yeah, I actually have that. But I wish they would release like the old Ghostbusters cereal because I never got to have any of that. All the old cereals, like the Nintendo cereal that had like a Super Mario Brothers half and then a Legend of Zelda half.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? For those of you basically listening, though, if you're not live with us, Mario Day is this Tuesday, March the 10th. And so I was watching, they have a new trailer for the Super Mario Galaxy film coming, which by now, hopefully everybody maybe has watched by the time.
I just saw the trailer because or the teaser, not the full trailer, because I'm trying to remain spoiler. I don't like watching trailers because a lot of times they give a lot of the fun stuff away right there in the trailer. So. Well, I'm looking forward to it next month.
They at least told the plot that's like, yes, it's basically Bowser Jr. has done something and Mario and Luigi are going to space. And they did say that Chris Pratt and that I forgot the guy who's voicing Luigi did say that the brothers will be able to have an adventure together the entire time instead of being split up. So that way it's more fun. Then, of course, we are going to introduce the other princess. Rosalina.
Or Daisy.
Yeah, well, yeah, Daisy. I don't think Daisy's in it, but I think Rosalina might be the one coming in. I don't know.
Yeah, she was in the teaser.
Yeah. Daisy, I guess, came around with Super Mario, the Game Boy. That wasn't Super Mario World, whatever the Game Boy one.
I think that's where Daisy came in. Where's Pauline with Donkey Kong?
Yeah. Well, here's my question. What happened to Princess Toadstool, the redhead? She's gone. Suddenly Peach showed up. Where did Toadstool go? Because Peach is a blonde.
That's right.
So when did this swap? Because, you know,
she dyed her hair and changed her name.
Because even I think Super Mario 2, wasn't she still Princess Toadstool with the red hair? Because even in the animated series that was on television, I think was still Toadstool up through, I think even Super Mario World.
How did I not realize that?
She became Peach when we got to the Nintendo 64. All of a sudden, Peach came around. So it's kind of like Glove and Boots has actually done a video a long time ago. When if you ever watched Glove and Boots, they wondered where. No. Wait a minute, this the Pauline that we see in Donkey Kong is not the same Pauline that's in the Super Mario game where she's supposed to be the mayor of like New Donk City or something. I haven't played that game.
Oh, okay. So I haven't either. So
yeah, Nintendo has different. A bad habit of overcharging even for used games.
Oh, man.
And then they want to blame tariffs for the reason their games don't sell. It's like, no, your games don't sell because they're flipping expensive, even when they're older. You guys charge too much for your licensed characters. And you don't lower the price to where maybe people pick it up later. But I don't know. That's a whole other different issue. I won't jump on that one too far. Okay, but I should move on to the next topic. Speaking of games, what have you been playing? Have you been playing anything interesting this week?
Nope. I haven't. Honestly, I'm one of those old school. I enjoyed the Nintendo, the Atari, and the Super Nintendo. After that, I put it away because I'm the kind of guy that it gets so addictive that if I could spend like the whole Mario Maker when that came out, I was like, my eyes widened. Yeah. And it was like, look, I could like lose my job on stuff like this. Like I have to stay focused. So I don't even play solitaire, like those little games.
Not even playing on your phone.
No, not lately.
Yeah. I've had to strike a balance because, you know, I have to work. I have to work on the podcast. I have to do other things around here, but I squeeze in some time when I can. COVID was great because I was stuck at home. So how I got through COVID was Final Fantasy VII Remake, and then Rebirth came out, and I was squeezing time whenever I could. But so the funny thing is, like, at the start of last week, I was trying to work my way through Star Wars Jedi Survivor, and I'm barely scratched the surface of that thing. But the new WWE 2K26 came out, and Philip had already given me and our friend Seth the money to buy it because he wants us to be able to play with him and all this other stuff. He gets super excited about these. I don't, but especially because they never really fix the games, and they always set up. I don't know if paywall is the right word for it, but all these microtransactions to constantly get some of the wrestlers that you want, like the old school wrestlers. Oh, look, now I got to pay extra. Yeah. So already he gave me $100 to get the $100 package. And if I wanted to do the extra 50, I could get even more wrestlers.
But
I was looking at what's expensive? Available to me. Like, oh, look, Andre the Giant is there. Oh, but you're going to have to unlock him. And it doesn't even say how to. Macho Man Randy Savage is somewhere locked behind something. Hollywood Hulk Hogan's locked behind something. So I was like,
those are all the best ones.
These are the ones that I actually want to play with. I don't care about these new guys.
Yeah.
So, but it is fun to kind of create. So I did try to do the bit of the showcase that they have CM Punk as a showcase. And I actually like CM Punk. He's very charismatic. He's fun to watch. So they have him a showcase going through some of his matches. But you have to do certain objectives in a match in order to unlock things. And usually I'm trying to unlock bits of costume or sometimes even characters, because even when you unlock the character, their costume will come out. So I can create characters that maybe I need bits of their wardrobe. Like I need this person's boots to look just right. So I was trying to do the showcase, and it got to a thing where I was having a match with The Rock, and I had to do a move thief thing, which requires you to let The Rock build a finisher. Now, if you know how these games work, you have a signature move that you build up. If you perform the signature, instantly you get to do your finisher.
Okay.
So I needed to have The Rock with a finisher built up so I could do a move thief, so I could do a rock bottom on him for an objective. Well, of course, as soon as he does the signature and I'm stunned, he goes straight to do his finisher. Every time. Happened like 3 times, and I have video recording of this. I think it's now posted up to the Fandom Gamer. If you want to see my frustration, I quit after that. And they give the option to do a 20 wrestler gauntlet, where if you can beat 20 guys in a row, you'd be fine. But I got to Stone Cold Steve Austin's, and the second guy hit me with a stunner, and I couldn't get out of it. So I was like, you know, forget this. But I was really frustrated. Like, I just want to create some people. And it's irritating that every year that I end up getting this game, I have to recreate all the people I made before, because for some reason they haven't figured out, like, hey, why don't we look at my old save file and all the characters I created and let me port them over. And I don't know, even maybe let favorite creators that I've had from the previous game, maybe they're still favorite creators on the new game, so I can go and find the people who I like when if they've made a really cool He-Man and all this other stuff. So just save me some time and let me bring some characters over. So
That'd be nice.
I get really frustrated with it, but I'm like, all right, I'm playing it for my buddy Phil. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to create some stuff. So I have made, because I'm a Final Fantasy junkie, I've made Aerith, Tifa, and Cloud so far. And I have yet to make myself and my wife, but I will. And then I'll start working on maybe some other characters. I don't know. But that's part of the fun, is creating the characters.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, comic book characters I came up with when I was a kid, comic book characters that I want, although some people usually make a really good Spider-Man. But I end up doing like an entire show just based upon fictional characters that I love. And then I'll do like a separate show, because you got this whole universe mode. I'll do a separate show where all the classic wrestlers will be at. And then I'll usually probably shut down Raw and SmackDown because I don't care about them. But the classic wrestlers I want, they've put behind, I don't know, it's a paywall or what they've done, but I can't get access to them right now. And so I'm kind of frustrated with that game. So they haven't released it to the general public until this Friday, but you know, because we pre-ordered it digitally, we got early access on Friday.
Nice. Is it one of those games you can wait 10 years and pay $20 and get all the downloaded content and everything and those nice little Humble Bundles things?
Usually within 2 years, they completely shut down the 2 years old game, because they put out a new one every year, kind of like a John Madden game, which. You don't lose much. You got basically every player that's available in that season are still there. Although I have I kind of bought late the one that was the year that John Madden passed away or whatever. And they did like a tribute and put him on the cover. Mm. There is some stuff that I can't do because the online stuff is shut down already for that one. But I kind of got it just for the John Madden cover. So like I still have my one that has Patrick Mahomes on the cover somewhere where I bought that. And I played it a little bit, but. I cannot figure out football simulation that these games are. I miss the old arcade style football games that I could actually figure out. Mm. But I'm buying it because Mahomes is on the cover. I bought this one because, you know, John Madden was on the cover. So it's more of about collecting than playing Madden games. Because I'm terrible at them.
Yeah. It's not like the Tecmo Bowl with the dee dee dee.
Yes.
Dee,
dee, dee. Although the computer totally cheated at Tecmo Bowl. On the NES, you could win one game in your season, but then the second game, suddenly it knew everything you were going to do and would just cheat. And like,
lame.
Yeah. But it was fun to play with your friends. Although basically all you had to do was like run to win into the end zone, and you could actually throw the ball all the way to the other end zone where your receiver is just standing there waiting for it.
So, exactly.
But it was still fun.
Yeah.
Okay, but I guess we better get on moving right along. So this is a good opportunity to mention Debbie. If you go to NeverlandPodcast.com, that's right, the home of the Neverland Network of Podcasts. You'll find Watching Movies with My Pastor, which I need to get that rolling again. We haven't picked that back up. Of course, you'll find the Phantom Nexus Retro Show, which you are listening to right now. The Mighty Marvel Tooncast will come back. And also, you can find the podcast I run of sermons from Philip under the Moment of Truth Bible Baptist Church. You can find that all there, and you'll find a huge logo for Dubby, or go to W.GG and use the discount code of Neverland. But if you go in there, if you want to have something to drink, you're a gamer, you need energy, you don't want the jitters, you don't want a bunch of caffeine, click in there, find you a good flavor. It mixes with water. You can get bottles and all kinds of fun stuff. And of course, I get a little kickback. So you're basically helping me out. That is Dubby. Okay, so I don't have anything for the trailer park, although we did talk about that there was a trailer for Super Mario Galaxy, but
there we go.
I got a lot of info for Snow White and the Seven Dwarves. Do you remember when the first time you saw the movie was?
No.
You don't?
My parents took me to movies. I remember seeing a re-release of the Rescuers that was paired with, I think that came out with Mickey's Christmas Carol or something. That was mid 80s, but my parents would take me to those growing up. So I don't know. It might've been, if I hadn't seen it in the theater, one of its re-releases, I definitely saw it on the Disney Channel when we had it in the 80s, back when there was the Disney Channel in the 80s, people, that was the prime time because there were no commercials.
Yes.
And they Donald showed Trump everything.
Believe me, that's going to be something we're going to cover. And I mean, we've done some coverage on the old Disney Channel, but we're going to hit that pretty hard here in the future episodes because there were so many great shows.
Nice. Do you remember when you saw it? Well, you Did you mention that you saw it as an adult yet?
Yes, I bought it. I bought like an anniversary release, and that was the first time I actually sat and watched it. Because now here's the funny story. Okay, so when Spaceballs came out, and that was what, 1987, and I got a listing of all the times it was re-released. And that was the 50th anniversary. Was in 1987. Wow. And they had that showing at the Antioch Mall nearby.
Okay.
If I remember correctly. It might have been a different mall, because there was a theater that used to be that, now it's like a Dollar Tree, and that had two screens. And I remember in like in 84 they had Pete's Dragon on one side and Gremlins on the other, and we were curious about Gremlins because it was all over at Hardy, so we're like, "Oh, what is this movie? Let's go watch it." And I got kind of freaked out because I was still a little kid. And I even told my brother while we're in there, so maybe we should have went to Pete's Dragon during the whole kitchen scene. There was...
Before there was PG-13.
Yeah. I feel like I was at Antioch Mall where we went to a movie, but we might have went all the way up to Metro North. But I remember there only being two screens, and it was inside of a mall. And my mom and some family friends of ours and like the youngest kid... and his name is Kevin. They all went to go watch Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. The rest of us, me, my brother, sister, and our family friend Kim, all of us older ones, we went over to the other side to watch Spaceballs.
There you go.
Which I do not regret, because Spaceballs is a brilliant movie.
I was about to say, you probably made a good choice.
Yeah, I probably did. I mean, but overall, I mean, I do like Snow White, but we'll get into some of our thoughts about Snow White as we go in. But I do want to get into a little bit of some facts. I did have to go do a little bit of research. Thank you, ChatGPT, for helping me dig up all the articles. I save so much time on research now. okay, so they did a big premiere now, December 21st, 1937, at the Carthay Circle Theater in Hollywood. And you can find videos of this where they had, I think, people dressed up as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs running around. Just a bunch of people running around there, including Charlie Chaplin, Judy Garland, and Marlene Dietrich is mentioned. I have no idea who that is. I mean, this ended up being a big thing, but what was funny is they were calling this Walt's or Disney's folly, because no one thought that anyone in America would sit through a feature length cartoon.
In fact, Disney was concerned that his Hollywood friends wouldn't show up for the premiere because it was a cartoon, not a live action.
And really, when you watch it, it's pretty much identical animation to the Silly Symphonies.
Right.
So they're basically just doing a fairy tale, but they're doing like a full length version. It only kept it to an hour. And unfortunately, he cut out a scene that I think should have been put back in.
The soup scene?
The soup eating is fantastic. Yeah. And it's so sad that like with the special edition cuts, like we get to see it as a separate deleted scene. It's like, you know, there's no reason why you couldn't edit that back into the movie.
In fact, they did. They did a special showing at Disney Channel or something. Because I saw it. They sliced it back into where it was supposed to go. Yeah. So that was fun. But they also, there was a couple other scenes that they edited that was almost finished. At one point when they meet Snow White, Doc and Grumpy getting like a fist fight almost, but they wind up making her a bed, and that scene was edited out. That would have been cool. That wasn't finished, but there were some storyboards and everything, things like that. I would love to see.
So I haven't even seen, I bet the storyboards are somewhere, probably somewhere on my Blu-ray that I got for whatever anniversary that would have been. I probably should have brought it up so I know what anniversary it was, but it's probably got some of that and I haven't really looked at it.
Oh, there's so much. It's great.
Yeah. And that's probably some of the better stuff in the film. One of the things that he told the animator who was working on the soup, he says, "I really got to get back to the witch." And he was trying to keep the story moving so he could keep the length down a little bit. And
yeah.
It makes sense. Walt was a brilliant storyteller, and you can never fault him for that. He'd already taken out a $1 million bank loan. He borrowed against his insurance. He mortgaged his house, all just to try to finish the movie. He had a budget of about $1.5 million, which was pretty huge for 1930s.
Oh, it's unheard of, especially for a cartoon.
But it was the highest grossing sound film of its time. It made around $7.8 to $8 million worldwide. And then over with re-releases, it's $180 million worldwide in modern box office total. So, he got his money back. And more, next thing you know, he's building theme parks with the money he's making with making feature films. They re-release it in 1944 during World War II, 1952, 1958, 1967, 1975, 1983, and then 1987. And of course, all these theatrical returns is why they got a box office going. And then finally, in 1994, we got the first VHS release, which was a huge seller. 2001, we got the first DVD. And then 2009, we got a Blu-ray Diamond Edition restoration. That's probably the one that I have as a 2009 one, because I know it's some special edition, so it's probably that Diamond Edition. But they've restored it many times, trying to keep the original artwork up. And now, a lot of people think this is the first full-length animated film, but actually, some places around the world had done some full-length ones, but it hadn't caught on here in the United States, because, you know, I mean, Japan's always been, I bet they had a full-length one, but there was something I saw, is like, you know, Walt wasn't the first one to do it, but he's the first one that made it a blockbuster. Because Walt would get ideas, he would travel, and he'd be like, hey, we could do that, and we could do it better. So, like, even the animatronics, he went and got those little bird things, and he showed it to his Imagineers, like, we can build this, and we can build it better.
Yeah.
So he would get ideas, like, let's do it our way.
With Walt Disney, he was visiting Germany, and they had several of his shorts back to back to back, like over an hour's worth of all his shorts, his silly symphonies back to back. And he was like, people are staying for the whole thing.
Yeah.
And they said, yeah. He's like, that helped encourage him to do that. He said at that point, he decided, okay, when I get back to the States, we're going to do a movie.
Go for it.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's why I like that the notes that I have says first full length cell animated feature from an American studio.
Interesting. I'll have to look more into that.
It had been done at least once. I'm thinking it was Japan, but I might be wrong. But I remember reading up on that once, that there was at least one other one. At least one. There might have been a couple more, because, you know, Japan has always been big on animation, and they've always been pushing the envelope. And
France has always been in the arts with the animation as well. So it might have been over there as well. Interesting. So
one of the two probably did it. And now you have something to research. But he did prove that animation could tell some serious emotional stories and not just short cartoons. Even when people were watching this, when Snow White is supposedly possibly dead, people were crying in the theater.
Yeah.
And he got a standing ovation at the end of the film.
Yeah.
And is listed actually as the number one animated film of all time on the 10 greatest films in 10 genres by the American Film Institute.
Right. At that point, they knew they could make people laugh with cartoons. Yep. The biggest gamble is, can they make people cry and to really care about these characters?
Care about the characters.
Yeah.
Although I got to say, every time I watch it, I don't get that interested until the dwarves show up. The dwarves totally make this movie and they're hilarious. I love the dwarves. And it was such a great idea. Instead of just, you know, generic dwarves, Walt says, no, we're going to make sure they all have personalities. And each one is a character. That was genius. And apparently, even at one point, and I have this noted somewhere, that they were going to have Dopey talk.
Yep.
And
they did auditions for him. They couldn't find the right voice. Right.
Yeah. And we've almost had Jumpy, Baldy, Deffy, Puffy, and Burpy.
Yeah. Deffy was going to be deaf.
Yeah,
but they decided against it, which would have been interesting. They could have had the first like sign language in an animated movie. So,
I mean,
that would have been interesting.
It's a fairy tale, so you could say sign language exists, and then you could do that now, definitely in the modern age, and you'll be praised for it, even if your story's terrible. But they'll be like, "Hey, thanks for including a deaf character and signing character." And so, I mean, even back then, I think probably would have been praised for that.
But they got a mute, so that's good.
Yeah. And he steals scenes all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
Especially sneaking in, trying to get a second kiss on his head. And trying to get one on the lips.
Well, no. He goes in trying to get a kiss on the lips.
Yep.
And each time he's denied with just the head.
Yep. She grabs his ears. Nope. Now, have you ever read the original Grimm's fairy tales of this?
I have not.
Known as Rose Red in some cultures because
interesting,
she had pale skin and red ruby lips. Because back in the day when they said you were fair, skinned like we would have now, like Irish women, the typical thing where you might have lighter skin tones. That was kind of a popular, considered beautiful back then, which is why people were kind of.
I was about to say back in the day, the royalty didn't go outside to work. Mm-hmm. So the lighter the skin you were, it meant like the more royal, the more regal, it was a thing of beauty to be aspired to have the fairest skins. That means you didn't go outside and work.
Right. Because I don't know that Rose Red, as she was called, but later was called Snow White because of her white skin. But she was known for her ruby red lips. She was a child.
Yes.
So she wasn't necessarily beautiful.
Oh, it wasn't wasn't even a teenager, but no, an actual
she's
child.
She's supposed to be like, I think the oldest I've seen her is maybe about 12. Because the thing about Grimm's fairy tales is they kind of collected these stories, and it's hard to really tell who came up with it originally, but they would collect them. And I've got a book and I kind of read through, had a lot of them, but it was known as Rose Red originally. But then you start reading, it's like, oh, this is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. But she was kind of a child. And the weird thing is the apple that she got was supposed to kill her. But what happened is it got lodged in her throat.
Oh, wow.
And it kind of knocked her out, and she was stuck in a stasis. And so what happened is the prince who was coming to rescue him, when he moves her, she coughed up the apple and she was fine.
Oh, how
now,
funny.
I think there might be a kiss, but that with her being young, a lot of times the kiss isn't there. But Wald's knowing how to make a good fairy tale makes her older, gives the prince, which I never understood why women were always complaining that they had like this one dimensional princesses, because for men, we get a prince and he's got one song. I only have one song. And that's his entire personality.
Yep.
We didn't get a decent prince character until Prince Philip. And then that Maleficent movie even destroyed that for us. So, yeah, you all have no complaints about princesses.
Jeremy, when you got it, you got it. You don't need it anymore.
Yeah, you're just charming. You don't even have a name. You're just charming.
Yeah.
Sir.
You're a prince. That's all you need.
That's right. So, because not even the Princess Cinderella. I mean, does he even have a name? He's not even called Charming.
No, you're right.
He's just there. So we had princes that were like really just one side and were there for 5 minutes just to be just falling madly in love with some woman he just met, you know, that kind of thing. But you know what? The thing about classic Disney animation is we were willing to go along with it and just enjoy the fairy tale. It exactly. worked. We would still cry over it. We'd still cheer for it.
Are you a fan of Adventures in Odyssey, Lamplighter Theater, or Jonathan Park? Want to join other fans for discussions or behind-the-scenes info about these shows? Or maybe you're looking for more great audio drama to listen to with your family. Do you enjoy hearing exclusive interviews with the cast and crew of your favorite shows? Then Audio Theater Central is the podcast for you. I'm J.D. Sutter. Since 2010, Audio Theater Central has been exploring the family-friendly audio drama world through news, reviews, and interviews. Join me and a rotating cast of co-hosts each month for another episode featuring the latest updates, in-depth reviews of new releases, and conversations with the actors, writers, directors, sound designers, and composers who create your favorite audio dramas. And maybe we'll introduce you to some great shows you've never heard of before. Find us at audiotheatercentral.com or in your favorite podcast app. That's audiotheatercentral.com.
Right.
I don't know.
In fact, it does a lot better than a lot of stuff they're making nowadays.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like the first time I think, well, no, see, Philip, we did because we got them as kids and we got a little bit more personality and a bit of his story with Aurora, which we'll probably cover Sleeping Beauty at some point because it is beautiful to look at. The style of it is amazing. But like I'm trying to think like the first meal. Well, we got Pinocchio, but he doesn't fall in love with a girl or anything.
No.
And we'll have to cover that sometime too, because I've listened to the audiobook of Pinocchio and it's an entirely different thing.
Yes.
I've heard goodness.
That. Yeah.
And I actually like the movie better because Pinocchio was a likable character in the movie and the books. Right. I don't like him at all. He's horrible.
Yeah.
But he's
like you said, Disney's a master storyteller. He was like Mary Poppins. I read the original books. Yeah. Disney. He had a knack for making it better. I don't know how, because typically if you ask anybody, did you like the movie or the book? And people who read the book, generally the book is always better than the movie.
Yeah.
But you know, didn't, now of course now Disney changes things,
yeah,
and makes it different, but he had a way of, he had a gift.
Yeah, he had a, like, even Jungle Book, he said, this is a great book, I've got licensing for it, and he handed it to his writers. Okay, now don't read the book, but just write stories from it. And what they did is they pulled, like, there's just a little section about Mowgli, and they just focused on that and came up with the film of the Jungle Book. But it's a pretty good movie. It's not one of their best, but I still like the Jungle Book.
Yeah, same. So
it's still fun.
It's a classic Disney.
It's a classic, as you voted it on your the Retro Rewind podcast. Right. I think you were the only one to give it a classic when I was listening. I was like,
oh,
really?
No.
That's what I was like. Paul is going to have to join me on stuff because we both can appreciate classic Disney animation, unlike the rest of the people over there. I don't understand that. But okay. Some of the other fun facts, and you've probably seen there's different photographs where Walt would want to tell the story of what he's got in mind. And so he actually acted out the entire movie for his animation team. He did all the characters, did all the dwarves, did the queen, did Snow White. And basically, Annenberg said it was like watching a one-man stage show. But he would frequently do that when he'd have an idea what to do with it. He would kind of act it out. And even in the 90s, the story pitchman would do the same thing. And there's like, I remember there was this big Lion King behind the scenes with hosted by Robert Guillaume, which I wish they would release somewhere. I watched that thing multiple times. But you could see some of the head writers were like acting it out in the writing room. And it's like, oh my goodness, the tradition kind of lives on.
Oh yeah, that's how they do animation still to this day. A lot of, I don't know about to this day, but up until the 90s and 2000s, they were still doing that.
Yeah.
But Jeremy, did you know this? I took some animation classes myself to draw and stuff. And there's animation lore. There is a tale, that animator's tale from back in the day, the Disney animators. This was before they began working on the movie or anything. Walt Disney gathered up all his artists. He said, okay, we're go out to eat, come back, have a good, nice dinner, because come back and I'm going to go over some things with you. They come back and Walt Disney himself performs the whole story of Snow White right in front of them, playing all the characters that night. And they said he was mesmerizing. Like, If I had a time machine and I could go back only one time in the past 100 years to a location, it would be that night to see him perform that story. Now, granted, they didn't have all the pieces like you see on the screen now, but he had the general idea. And they said, because he was such a master at it, I would love to have seen that.
Yeah, and there's signs of that from his early years. I don't know if you've ever gotten to visit Marceline, Missouri. At any point in your life?
No.
Well, if you ever do, let me know. I'll meet you up there and I'll be a tour guide.
Okay.
But there's a lot of the items they have in that museum was donated by Ruth Disney, his baby sister. And part of Walt's job on the farm in Marceline was to keep her occupied. So the Dreaming Tree, which is kind of famous and well known, is where he would sit. He would draw. He would dream up stories, but he'd sit with his sister and he would tell her stories. And she said he was the greatest storyteller she'd ever heard in her life, even when she was older.
Wow.
So it started when he was just a boy telling stories to his sister and drawing the pictures. That's where it began.
That makes sense.
So that storyteller was still going as an adult.
And I've heard interviews that when he said that when he was a kid, that he would go to the local theater and perform Charlie Chaplin routines.
Yes.
And so he was not only a storyteller, but he's acting it out.
Yeah.
He's like, this guy is a genius to be able to do all these things.
I think he even
to act, to story. That's incredible.
I think I've heard something about him dressing as Charlie Chaplin and doing that as a talent show thing, even at school.
Okay.
Like the early days. I've heard some stuff about that because he liked to do that. And then one of his favorite things is he got to play Peter Pan when he was a little boy too, because that was his favorite story, which is why eventually he did get the rights. But the thing is the animated Peter Pan actually sticks fairly close to the story of Peter Pan.
Yes.
Which I'm like,
Disney, yes.
Because that was, he loved it. Now, he took out some of the darker elements, if you ever get a chance to read it.
Yeah, the massacres, the Indian massacres and such. Yeah.
And Captain Hook is kind of scary because he has, they kind of play at it in the animated where Captain Hook gets irritated with somebody and just off screen shoots him. But in the book, he guts him with his hook and throws him off of a boat that they're on. So I'm like, Captain Hook is actually a scary character in there and a threat. And so not Just like I still love him in the animated, but he's not scary. He's like Skeletor in the 80s, where he's like, oh, you look scary because you have a skull face, but you're really not a scary character. You're funny, and we love you for that. So
that's funny.
I hope they got a really good balance in the upcoming movie. It's like, all right, let him be kind of funny, but yeah, let him be scary. Let him be evil. Let him be evil. Mm. The Dark Lord of Destruction that Skeletor is supposed to be. But anyways, yeah. So like Captain Hook was completely changed. Okay, so I'm actually gonna skip up there. They did keep a secret who Snow White's voice was, but it was Adriana Caselotti. And this was kind of the beginning of like some of her acting for other stuff. She only got $970, but she was mainly known for her singing, which was kind of an amazing thing. But I wanted to, you know, 2 million drawings was done for 250,000 final animation sales, but I wanna jump. Oh, okay. We do have to mention that Shirley Temple gave him the one full size Oscar and 7 tiny Oscars.
Yes.
It was on the 11th Academy Award, and it was a special Academy Award because they didn't have one for animation until after right. Beauty and the Beast, because Beauty and the Beast should have won over Sons of the Lambs, and I will die on that hill. But they're like, we can't give it to an animated. So yeah.
Yes, you can.
Yes, you can. So they created this best animated feature after that, and Disney's pretty much dominated that most of the time. But I figure, okay, you're, let's see, which one of you is in California, the other is in Oregon.
I'm in California.
So
yes.
You've most likely been to Disneyland, I'm sure.
Yes.
So one of the things that is famous about Disneyland is you sneak up on the Evil Queen, and then at the last second when you're up there, she turns around and she used to scare the snot out of people. Now, did you ride that as a kid? That startled you at ever at any time?
The ride you're talking about, or the character?
The ride. Well, yeah, the ride, because you come up on the Evil Queen and she turns around and she's the evil old woman.
Yeah, and she turns around
and it's really quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So did that ever give you like a scare when you were little?
I was not allowed to ride that ride when I was a kid, when my parent took it, because they thought I would be too scared. So I didn't ride that as a kid until I was a teenager. Plus there was always long lines, and my parents were like, I don't want to waste the time if he's just going to be scared, kind of a thing.
Cause even going through the woods, you know, and they did call it the Snow White Scary Adventure.
Oh yeah,
it was called that because they were meant to be a little bit scary as you're going through the woods, and you have the drawing of, you know, straight from the film where she's all panic and everything, and a lot of people say that part of the film is getting a little scary.
Oh yeah.
And it's like they really go up the intensity, but what's brilliant about that part of the movie, and this would be my classic maker for those of you know, is you understand. She was just told by the huntsman, it's like, hey, the queen wants to kill you. And he's got the knife and he nearly did it. It's like, no, I can't do it. It's wrong. And he tells her, run. She's going to kill you. So she's already in a panic. Like, oh, my gosh, I was nearly murdered. She runs into these unknown dark woods. So you get totally in her mindset when you're in there, that she's terrified because she was nearly murdered. It's not that the woods are necessarily a scary place, but it's unfamiliar to her. She's running for her life. And you feel that in that part of the movie. And then finally you get where she kind of calms down and a little bit, and the animals come out because of their Disney animals. They come out like, oh, it's a princess. We will make friends with her and we will wash dishes, you know, because she needs the dishes washed. But it's so brilliant because they let you feel what she's feeling.
Yes. And to be able to do that is just incredible.
Yes. So that is the best one. So is there like a best moment for you?
A best moment? I don't know. It's so good. I would have to call my classic maker the dwarves themselves.
Yeah.
I don't know about a moment. You know what? I will say, okay, people may disagree. It's like, that's the best moment. It's one of the better moments, but they take Grumpy, the character Grumpy, and he is so ornery and so grumpy, but they give him an arc so that by the time that you think that she's dead and they are crying and you see him crying.
Yeah.
And he turns away because he's in such grief. That gets me. I had tears in my eyes because of his arc. of him being so against women and their wildish ways.
Yeah.
And to the point where he's sad at her passing. That's a journey I wasn't expecting to be taken on. And they did it again, an incredible job of doing that through the movie.
Yeah. And you kind of get the idea, even with Grumpy, when much as he fusses, like, you know, underneath it all, you keep seeing those little hints. You'd see like, yeah, you're not as bad as you seem. You're just kind of stubborn. You hate change and stuff like that. You don't really hate her. You just want to act like it. You know, you're just a little grumpy, but, you know, you got a good heart under there. You're still a nice dwarf. You just got to dig through the layers. You got to see past. Sort of like there's a grumpy Care Bear, which is kind of weird. Like the Care Bears have so much love, but there's Grumpy the Care Bear.
Yeah, I never realized that. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's really not all that grumpy. But he's there when you're feeling bad, you know, and you're if you're feeling grumpy, he's there to kind of like, yeah, I understand. You know, sometimes bad things happen.
Yeah, unlike mourn with those who mourn.
Yeah, grumpy Smurf just hated everything.
Yeah, that's so true.
Except baby Smurf. Because he was secretly, like, I remember, like, the first episode where Baby Smurf showed up, he's like, oh, I hate this, like, but I kind of like, maybe he's kind of quiet to himself, like, all right, you know. But that's the first time he ever said anything other than, I hate this and I hate that. This, you know, Grumpy Smurf was very one-dimensional, but Grumpy the Dwarf has an entire story and coming around, and you realize, you know, you're not so bad. You're kind of cool. You just got an attitude.
And they did it subtly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible the finesse that they took these characters. And back in the day, in the early pioneering of film, to be able to do that with a character, it's incredible.
Yeah, and an animated one where you could relate, you could understand what he was going through. You got through him, and that takes a lot of study. And I mean, heck, we could talk about the rotoscoping, because this is the beginning of like having some, and you can see like the old footage of the guy who was, he was just plump enough that they used for the basis, I think, of Happy doing his little foot dance. And you can find all the footage and even some dancing that Snow White does. They kept that same footage and they use it again, like in Robin Hood.
Right.
And I don't know how much it actually would be rotoscoping, because to me, rotoscoping would be like something secret in them.
When people say rotoscoping, people traditionally think of like the Fleischers, where they would trace sometimes, like the Coco Clown kind of things. Yeah. But Disney was adamant, Walt was adamant, that they said they didn't tracing.
Yeah.
They did no tracing for the final product. They just took that as reference and used it.
And his artists were that good that they could replicate it, but they would draw their character over top of rotoscoping. Usually they're drawing just exactly what's there.
Right. You know,
like Secret of NIMH with the farm equipment.
And the timing.
If they'd had a computer, they would have done it with that. But it was before computers, so you could rotoscope and you could make something machinery believable back like Secret of NIMH and Lord of the Rings, where they would kind of draw the armies and the battles and stuff like that. Which, that's still actually worth watching, too, the old animated Lord of the Rings. It's worth the watch.
I'm curious about it. It's been a while. Yeah. I remember enjoying it when younger. So that's one of those. I wonder, does it hold up? So you say it does. So
I think it does. It's a little slower pace, but there's a lot of the things that they did with trying to abridge the story and translate the story that you see Peter Jackson's team kept their ideas and built from that. So there's a lot of similarities, but they do try to squeeze in a lot more of the songs, but trying to keep it from being slow and boring. So
yes,
for those of you that get that reference.
Yes, slow and boring.
We do have some updates, so that has happened to the ride. Like we got the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, which I've only been to Walt Disney World, and I've only been once, and it was in my 30s, early 30s, which you become obsessed for a while, but the obsession goes away when you don't keep going, so you're able to see the flaws. But they did a bit as a replacement, and in 2014 they opened up the Seven Dwarves Mine Train, which looks amazing, and it's kind of a hybrid. It's a little bit of a roller coaster, a little bit of a dark ride. It's got swing mine carts and a song and fun. And even in 2021, Disneyland got an update to Snow White's Enchanted Wish that has a more brighter tone. There's a bit more Snow White moments because
interesting.
They even have a clear True Love's Kiss ending, which the idea behind the ride originally was that you were Snow White. So you were seeing everything from her perspective and going through the story. So you'd get to see the end where the witch falls, but then you wouldn't have the ending part. So now you exit
the ride after that.
Yeah. So they decided to make it more magical than frightening was the idea behind that.
Oh, interesting. I didn't realize that. It's been a while since I read it. And I was blessed, I guess you could say, enough once. We were lucky to go to Walt Disney World for their 50th, just a couple years ago. And I was able to ride the the Snow White and the Dwarves Mine Ride once. So it's a good ride. I recommend it. It's a lot faster than the Disneyland one.
Yeah, I don't know if Disneyland's going to build a version of the mine cart ride like that. That'd be interesting if they did, but
be fun.
Disneyland's got a little bit of limited space, so if they want to build something new, something has to get torn down, unfortunately. Walt Disney World still has some land that they haven't utilized, and so you never know. They can find ways to kind of stretch some room a little bit here and there, so come up with whole new Star Wars parks and that kind of thing. So I used to have to follow and keep up with that to keep everybody informed, and thank goodness I don't have to, because wow, that was a lot of work. That was a lot of work trying to stay on top of what they were building in the parks to keep everybody informed. So the benefits of no longer being a Disney podcast. Oh yes. Oh yes. So I miss part of the audience I lost, but I don't miss all the work that it took. Of course, this still takes a lot of work to try to get like information and everything. But of course now, you know, AI does kind of help me do my research a little quicker. I just have to verify to make sure that the facts are giving me are accurate.
Exactly.
I even had last week a fact that it gave me, it actually for Tom Noonan, it gave me the wrong character. And I was like, wait a minute, that's wrong. And I had to go and look up. I was like, okay, no, it was the Ripper. But it, for some reason it was thinking he was the lead villain of the guy who had the glass eye. I was like, no, that's not Tom Noonan. Tom Noonan was that tall, scary guy with the axe, the Ripper.
That's right.
So yeah, you have to be careful when you do try to do your research. You always want to make sure and verify your facts. So it still takes a lot of work to do all this kind of thing. But yeah, thankfully I don't have to go and know everything going on in the parks anymore, because it was twice the work, because I have to research my topic, I have to research my news, and now we don't do that much news. So, and I don't think there was really anything big in news, you know, unless there was something you've heard about this week that maybe we should have mentioned before we wrap this thing up. Like nothing that got you excited other than, hey, look, the new Super Mario movie, you know?
Yeah,
because that was cool and I just saw it. So we will start wrapping this up. I don't have any new emails, but I do want to remind you all about Podgagement. That is Daniel J. Lewis, by the way, award-winning podcaster Daniel J. Lewis. That is his business, where if you happen to have a podcast, you want to be able to get your reviews from around the world all in one place, plus tons of other features. I have a link right there, and of course, I get a little kickback if you follow that link and set up an account with Podgagement. Of course, where is that website? That is neverlandpodcast.com. That is the home of the Neverland Network of Podcasts. And of course, we do want to thank Karen Kennedy, Ricky Pope of Christian Nerds Unite, and Darren Wilhite of the Wilhite and Wall Show. They're the ones that helped me out with that intro. And of course, don't forget, you can email us podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Find us on X at Neverland PCast, and on Facebook, of course, you can find the Fandom Nexus, or you can still look in the group that's under Neverland Podcast. And don't forget, I am on YouTube, of course, with this show, plus the Fandom Gamer, which you can find some of me trying to play through on that WWE 2K6 and failing at it. But I also have some other fun stuff that I did, too. And of course, don't forget, at NeverlandPodcast.com, you can join the Neverlanders, become an official Lost Boy or Pixie. Why do you become a Lost Boy? Because, well, girls do clever, I blew that line entirely. We don't have lost girls because girls are too clever. They don't get lost. That's lifted right from the book. And of course, we have the Patreon. And like I said, if this show has been part of your life in the last like 12 plus years and you'd like to help keep it growing, of course, you can join Patreon for even just $5 a month. And it kind of helps us going. No copyright infringement is intended, and copyright is held by the respective owners. Content is shared for review and commentary purposes under fair use license. And of course, we have the great Paul J. Powers of pauljpowers.com. So what is that, pauljpowers.com?
Basically, you could find all my social media links, whatever I've been up to, like the Retro Rewind podcast. There's a link to that there. Basically, if you want to know what I've been up to lately, go to pauljpowers.com.
What have you been up to lately? That doesn't make sense. I'm singing on the show today for some reason. Is this like the third little bit of song? That's frightening.
It's the Snow White singing coming out, the singing.
See, I sang the prince. I think this is like the third time. Okay, so if you're still listening, you have survived me singing three lines. But I guess that kind of happens sometimes in the show, especially when Philip and I, we sometimes sing with movies too. Oh my, that's frightening. Okay, but all right, thank you for sticking around. Make sure you go to apologypowers.com. And also, Firejoy Studios, I believe, is the main website where you got like the Retro Rewind podcast set up.
Yes. The firejoystudios.com.
And of course, you can be found on Facebook as well. If you go search for Retro Rewind Podcast, there's usually a lot of fun things going on with like what movies you're going to be covering on the next one. And because you guys like to have feedback from people commenting like what you might remember from the movie, even though you're about to do one and your newest episode is a movie I haven't seen. So I won't be listening to the episode because I don't want it spoiled for me. So I have to skip
don't worry,
one.
There's always a next one. We do it about every 2 weeks. So if you're not familiar with this one, just wait a bit. Two weeks, and you can catch us on the next one.
And you got a heck of a back catalog of going through. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember that movie. And sometimes you guys cover a video game and get a nice little panel together, and they give like three things they like and a classic maker, and then three things they don't like and a tragedy maker. Every one of the episodes, a lot of fun and everything, because sometimes you're going to like, you know, I kind of agree with that one. And you're probably more, if you're like me, you're probably going to agree with Paul more than you are Francisco. Francisco, he's really hard to please sometimes. But that's why I've told Francisco before, if you like something, you know, it's got to be good because it got through all his stuff that he's like. Meh. So very rarely have I disagreed with you. There's some stuff that you have a tragedy. I was like, well, really, that's not that bad.
Yeah. And we ought to have you on again just to represent you and your likes and dislikes, because everybody's individual.
Because I don't think I see for a movie. I don't think I've done anything since I did Masters in the Universe with you guys. And then I played Junkyard Juggernauts for a Saturday thing. I got to play that one before it was released.
Nice.
And now he's kind of working on developing a card game, apparently. Francisco, a little game maker that he is.
Yeah, he's going that route. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we review games, video games. I said I don't play video games that much. But if I do, it's usually for the Retro Rewind podcast to replay an old game. And we'll basically we review movies or games that are 15 years or older. See if they still hold up. Give our opinion, because there's a lot of times like, oh, I remember that back in the day. Is it worth our time? So we review it and we let you know if we give you our opinion, if it is or not.
And sometimes I kind of will listen, even if I don't know the movie, because like, I don't know if I'm ever going to watch. You did something. It was like Mothman or something over Halloween.
Oh yeah. The Mothman Prophecies. Right.
And I was like, I think I've heard of the movie. So I'm like, it's so obscure. I'm like, should I listen to the episode? Cause I don't know if I'm ever going to watch that movie, but I might. Well, I might listen to the episode and suddenly decide, I think I might want to watch this. I don't know.
Right. Or not. We'll save you the trouble. Or not.
Yeah. So it's sort of like hopefully at sometime very, very soon, we're going to have another guy named Paul come along here that does the Cinema Story Origins. And I actually was just recently he did the Halloween Tree a while back. And I was like, you know what? Let me just go ahead and listen to it, because he's actually an excellent storyteller. And he compares like the book versus the movie. And so sometimes even if you haven't seen the movie or the book, you're like, you know, if you don't mind it being quote unquote spoiled, it's like, you know what?
Right.
I just want to hear Paul tell me the story. So
nice.
We're hoping to have him on very soon. I'm hoping I can get him on for Wizard of Oz, but I'm trying to get coordinated with him because he wanted to do some stuff this year. So
speaking of Wizard of Oz, did you know that it's only because of the success of Walt Disney's Snow?
Oh, no, we lost the signal.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Its tale can be told for the family.
Yeah.
So if this hadn't succeeded, we would have never had MGM's Wizard of Oz. So
indeed. And we'll talk about how much the Wizard of Oz has meant to us over the years on next week's show, because at one point I had the thought, I had to stop myself. I thought about this really hard because, you know, I did listen back to see how Christmas Carol turned out. And I was like, wow, we did a really good job. This was fun to listen to. And part of my brain looked over. It's like, you know, everything's kind of big with Wicked right now. It's like, you know what? Let's get back to the original story stuff. And I have like some really thick books that are like, I think I got the entire Wizard of Oz or Oz series in these collected hardcovers. And I thought, you know, I could sit and read that. But I was like, do I really want to sit and read another book? You know, if I get enough people requesting that I read more public domain books on the show, we might do it. But that is a lot of work for me to try to put it together. But it might just be fun. So if anybody wants me to read the book to you all, because I've listened to an audiobook, but I've never actually just sat and read it. But there are some definite differences between the book and the movie.
Very much so. Yeah.
And I think I've listened to the second book, The Return to Oz, which I can't remember how accurate the book is to the Disney film. But I have watched that Disney film. That's a little disturbing.
The Disney
but I
film
it was
is actually a combination of two of them. And I think it's Ozma and. The re- I forget, but yeah, they combined both.
And Return to Oz, because you got the pumpkin head is from Return to Oz.
Okay, then yeah, it's both of those.
And I think they even the robot guy, I think, might have been Return to Oz. It's been a long time. This was back when I was working at a place called LabCorp, and I was sitting there doing data entry, so I'd listen to audiobooks all the time, which is why I've listened to the Harry Potter books like 10 times. Because I had a copy of those, so I would just sit there listening to that, but I got to listen to Dracula, Frankenstein, I listened to a lot of the classic books.
You were getting cultured there.
I was getting culture, and I'm the guy who will tell you that the music of the Phantom of the Opera Broadway stuff is great, but they screwed the story up severely.
Oh,
you should totally read the book, because it is scary, and you've got what would be the greatest James Bond villain ever, which the musical tried to make him this pitiable and completely lost the character of who the Phantom really is.
Oh, interesting, because I only know the Andrew Lloyd Webber one.
Yeah, okay. And he wrote his own story because he actually just had a crush on Sarah Brightman.
Right.
So,
which actually turned out well for him.
Yeah. I mean, made a lot of money, you know, and the music is great. I'm not taking it away from the
music.
And he
wound up marrying her. So,
yeah. But really, he botched the story because
that's interesting. I'm going to have to get that on audio. Then.
Especially the way he's described is he's an albino. Because he's got these glowing red eyes and this pale face it talks about. So I'm like, so that would be an albino. And he doesn't wear a mask except for with Christine. Then he puts a mask on to kind of hide. But his eyes glow red that he frightens people. They'll just see these glowing red eyes in the darkness.
Oh.
And so he's very terrifying. But he will waltz right into the room. Because at the beginning of the book, these two new owners come. And he just waltzes right into the room and says, here's my demands. This is how you're going to run my theater.
Right.
And they cut out a character called the Persian, which because you find out where the Phantom actually came from, that he actually was in the Middle East, and he made this basically security for this Sultan. He made this death trap maze to keep people out there, but he had this weird habit because he's kind of scary because he's an albino, but he was very wealthy, very powerful within the kingdom. But he had a stalking problem, and the girls he stalked usually ended up dead. So Christine is in danger the entire time. He is literally stalking and kidnapping her. It's not some like great romance that they try to make in the Broadway musical. It is a frightening encounter, and she's afraid to tell anyone because he lets her out to go perform, and then he snatches her away, and she's afraid to tell anybody what's happening.
That is different. Wow.
Yes, and Raoul is more of a character, and he is trying to find a way to get her out of the clutches, but the Phantom, there's a really great scene where Raoul is like, he's at home in his bed and he hears something. He wakes up and he just sees these two red glowing eyes at the edge of his bed is all just staring him down.
Creepy.
Doesn't say anything. But see, that's the Phantom. He's scary. He's built this death trap maze beneath the opera house so no one can survive getting down to him. He's a serial murderer. Yeah, that's why they at least keep that in the musical, the keeping hand at the level of your eyes, because he's really good with a noose and he can get it around your head from a long distance and choke you out. So the closest that anyone's ever come to getting it right was actually a Robert Englund one, because they actually made him scary and a serial killer and an obsessive stalker, but they didn't get anything else right because they made it a Robert Englund type movie. So I watched it once. I'm like, okay, well, that was enough. It's gory. And they even have in order to get the one girl to lose her voice, he leaves a bloody massacred body in her closet. So she opens it up, she screams and loses her voice instead of like the powder that he hits her with to give her this croaking, you know.
Yeah,
he's got all these little tricks and all these things. He's already outsmarted you. It's like, dude, this is a total James Bond villain.
There's
always a step ahead of you until finally you find a way to catch him. And I won't tell you how they finally get to him.
Yeah, dope, because I want to read it for myself. Yeah,
it is scary. I went through it multiple times. I was like, this is so scary. And it's a lot scarier than Dracula, because Dracula.
Oh, I gave up about 2/3 of the way through. Like, it's slow and boring.
Yeah. If you didn't know that he was a vampire, then you'd have this great mystery story. But problem is, once they've exposed him, he runs for it.
Yeah. But the thing is that it's the way it's set up, which is I applaud the, you know, it's a series of letters, which I applaud the style, like they're trying to get across. So maybe we can tell a story through a series of letters.
Yeah.
But it's also a bunch of shorts. It's a bunch of short stories that mix that you don't realize until, you know, until that they're all woven together kind of a thing.
But then it gets together. Frankenstein is definitely worth the read, but it's as depressing as not. Oh my goodness.
Oh.
It's very depressing because you get a lot more, because you get the Victor and his family's story, but you also get from the monster, because basically this is someone who's slowly becoming a man. You get to follow how he's developed mental development, and he's not this the whole time. He couldn't, right, because he learns to speak. You know, his scars kind of heal and he becomes a bit more normal, but you know, there's this whole different relationship. It is a tragic story of basically, it's because the lesson is don't play God.
Right.
Basically, don't try to play God and create life, because you're not going to take the responsibility for, you know, like even raising kids. I'm sure it's difficult. I don't have any kids, but I have cats and they're hard enough to herd. But trying to teach your children right choices. But that's one thing. But having where you've created a full grown man who's extremely strong, looks kind of scary looking until his scars kind of heal and he gets more human looking. But he doesn't have that buildup from a child of learning right from wrong. And so he develops his own morality as it goes along. And but Frankenstein is a long, slow, boring read, but it's very interesting. It's asking a lot of interesting questions, like good sci-fi. It's actually the first science fiction book.
Yeah.
So it's really good. Like good science fiction should do. It should get you to ask a few questions and make you think about stuff, like Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But we've wandered way somewhere. This, I was supposed to end the show like 10 minutes ago.
That's a little bonus for you people who stuck around.
A little bonus for sticking around. But you've stuck around long enough, so you might be familiar with us. So we got to just tell everybody to get lost in an adventure. Until we see you next time.